What Napoleon would teach white South Africans? What would Napoleon Bonaparte teach the whites of South Africa if he had to be in our situation? Today we're going to take a look at some recent stuff and also history. History of South Africa and even some of Napoleon's history. And I'm going to show you a couple of things because whites these days have become so feminized in their thinking, and this includes all the white males of the Western world. Every white man, no matter how masculine he may be, thinks like a woman. The entire society, led by liberals, Jews, the elite, has reached a point where we all think like women. Even if you're a man, even if you're a man who was in the army, we think like women. Our whole society thinks in a feminine form. However, when you study the history of whites, you will see that white people have always been a male-dominated society. And the key here is male domination. Men ruled their societies, men laid down the laws, men took care of the horrible things that men have to take care of. And it is so deeply ingrained in us that even our physical species, the men and the women, look very different compared to all other races. There is actually a scientific term, sexual dimorphism. Sexual dimorphism is the difference between the male and the female in any species. And it turns out that among white people, sexual dimorphism is the greatest of any of the human races on this earth. The differences between the way a man looks and is versus the way a woman is at its most extreme in the white race. We have a race that's got a history of manly men and feminine women. And when you start looking at other societies, including these blacks right under our noses here in South Africa, you will start to see that in other societies, even among Asians, especially among blacks, all these others, you will see that the male-female roles are not as completely separated and specialized as they are among whites. And so you will find that white people are actually the most, let's call it, sexually specialized race on the planet. Because this has worked for us, not for 100 years, not for 1,000 years, maybe 10,000 years, 50,000 years, maybe even longer. We've lived in Europe for over 40,000 years. And this is the result of a long, long period of breeding and culture, and we've changed, and we are different to the other races. We are different in many, many ways. And one of them is the extreme specialization of the male and female roles in our societies. And our men are not just a bunch of wild brutes. We have got men who are capable of doing all sorts of things intelligently, and we're going to look at some things. Now, this is the Napoleon that most people are not aware of. In the previous painting, you saw Napoleon on his charger, and it looked like he's a manly man and he's just out there doing wild things. However, in the history of our race, our military men are not like that at all. Our military men have got this kind of component that I'm going to show you here. Here is a sketch that somebody made of Napoleon lying on the ground studying his maps. And if you actually study the history of Napoleon and his campaigns, you'll see that this was actually a very common thing that Napoleon did. Napoleon took care of all his clerical stuff, of his planning. His planning was unbelievable. And his maps were incredibly important to him. And he was extremely organized. Massive amounts of planning and thinking went into everything he did. This guy didn't muck around. And it was quite common for him to get to points where he would grab his maps. They might be in his carriage, and he would lay down on the ground and he'd spread out his maps and he'd start studying his maps. And this while he's on campaign. His armies are marching all over the show. Large numbers of men are busy doing things, but he's controlling everything and he's always studying the situation. In fact, among Napoleon's maxims is one where Napoleon says that as you are on campaign, if you move forward and you look and you see a hill in front of you and something else to the side of you, the thing that you have to have in your mind at all times is, what if the enemy were to come over that hill right now? What would I do? That is the kind of thinking that was going on in this man's mind all the time. And to give you an idea of Napoleon, Napoleon fought more battles than Alexander the Great and Julius Caesar combined. In fact, he did fight more battles than any commander in the history of warfare in the world. And he's probably the most unique human being. He's the most unique male in that he was present at all these battles. And he probably saw more men going into battle, physically standing there watching soldiers going into battle, old soldiers, new soldiers. He saw more soldiers going into battle than any other male who's ever lived in the entire history of the earth. And no other male, not even in modern times, saw as many troops going into battle as Napoleon. So Napoleon is a real fighter, but if you actually study him, you wouldn't think so, because he's also extremely intellectual. And I still want to do a video and lecture series on the greatest generals of the white race. And Napoleon is definitely among them. But when you get to study our race, you will see that white males are the greatest warriors in the history of the world. They've taken the art of warfare further than anybody else. Yes, I've heard about Sun Tzu in China. I read the book, Sun Tzu, the Chinese general who wrote a book in 500 BC. Yes, I know all about that. I want to tell you, white males are the greatest conquerors in the history of the world. They are the greatest conquerors. The only non-whites who ever came close to matching them were the Mongols. Other than that, white males have been working on the art of war for thousands of years. And our methods and our thinking is the most advanced. And all you have to do is look around the entire world and you'll see that every single army in every single country in the world operates on the same principles that come from Europe, that come from white people. And I will tell you that most of the principles of the armies come from the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire is responsible for more of the things in warfare than any other particular group. But we are talking white people, we're talking white males. These are intelligent people, these are not fools and idiots. So this is the side of Napoleon that a lot of people don't know. Now I'm going to start showing you some stuff about South Africa, and you're going to see where Napoleon fits into this, and what would Napoleon do if he was in our situation. And I will give you some insights into the man's mind, and we will have a good look at how he would face some of the things that we have yet to face. So, the thing that I want to show you is we're going to look at some riots and we're going to look at a whole bunch of things to do with racial conflict in South Africa, and especially some videos that came out of Johannesburg recently. And I want to show you these things and we're going to go and study it. We're going to study the current stuff. We're going to study some historical stuff. You're going to see how we're going to put all this together. So, the first thing I want to show you is I just want to make it clear to you that black people in South Africa, the black communists who run this country and their henchmen and their followers and their offshoots have openly demonstrated violence and hatred and a desire to kill white people in South Africa. They have made it very clear. Of course, you get the large number who say, no, we're not involved in this, but there's a lot of this. And I'm going to just show you that white people do have reason to fear. It's not just a figment of their imagination. What you're looking at here is a placard. I think this is from the time of the war here in South Africa. The blacks refer to it as the struggle because they weren't very good at warfare. And the whites were whipping their asses all the time. But in those days, the whites controlled the military, the whites had the upper hand. Now everything's been turned on its head, and now people say, well, the whites are now finished. And that's exactly the thing that we're going to look at. Are the whites finished? And I'm going to take you, and we're going to have a whole military lesson on this. So here you can see a placard from the time of apartheid, and you can see it says, kill the Boer, kill the racist, kill Afrikaans. And you'll see on the bottom it says Uhuru. That was a term the blacks used in the early 1960s to mean their freedom. And they hate whites, but they have an even greater hatred for the Afrikaans-speaking whites. And the Afrikaans-speaking whites are mostly of European continental descent. They do not come from Britain, they come from the European continent. And they particularly hate the Afrikaans people the most. This is a shot from some film footage which I need to put out again, and it was actually put together more than 10 years ago. I actually met the guy who put this film footage together, actually. He was actually a young Zeelander, and he put this film footage together, edited it together in his apartment, and he did a really good job. And here he's got Nelson Mandela, and next to him, the guy in the green shirt, that is Ronnie Kasrils, a Jew communist. And he's still in the government of South Africa to this very day. He's a high-ranking government minister. He was even in charge of intelligence. And this is a translation from a song that they're singing. Notice the Jew with his clenched fist. Mandela also has a clenched fist there. This is the Black Power salute. So the Jew and the black with their Black Power salute. And they are singing about killing the whites. That's what this is about. This comes from Twitter. This guy is called Racial Consciousness. He's a guy in America. He does excellent stuff on Twitter. He puts out the truth. And here was something that he found on the social media where a black woman from South Africa, you can see her name there, this is what she said. She said, white people should be grateful to farm killings because their families benefit from it via insurance policies. Raping a white girl is a benefit for the white girl because she will know from first-hand experience what it means to be a teenage mom, and they will also qualify for grants. So complain about farm killings and rape then. So Racial Consciousness said, ever wonder what an authentic psychopath sounds like? Well, there you have it. That's what the blacks say. Here's another one. Also a black, you can see his South African name. It says, I love it when there is news about farm murders, farm killings, or farm attacks. And I love it when the attackers kill the white Afrikaner children. They must all die. All Afrikaners must die. A good Afrikaner is a dead Afrikaner. So also social media. Social media. This is from some years ago. I can't remember when. Not sure if it was apartheid, in the days of apartheid. But blacks put this on a wall. It says, disarm the police and kill the Boers. So, yeah, there you can see. There's another one from South Africa. And this one is important because we're going to talk about this kind of stuff. Here is somebody. I'm not sure if this is a black. This might even be a colored. But this person says the following. He says, lol, you know, laughing out loud, they don't have enough bullets for us all. They can try, but it will only make it worse for them. Heck, I'm actually counting on them to resist this. To resist this was 500 years in the making. Well, he's got his history wrong. Mandela undermined black power when he got free, but not this time around. This time, no one will come to their rescue, not EU, not the US, not even the apartheid state of Israel, not even the Anglo-Australians or nor Arabs will save them. Well, I do agree with him that I don't think the US or the EU or anybody else is going to help us, but we can help ourselves. And take note of him saying they don't have enough bullets for us all. He's already talking in race warfare terms about their numbers. Their numbers are going to overwhelm us. And we're going to be talking about that in detail. Here's another guy. This thing is, it's not called Black Land First. It's actually Black First Land First. But people rather use the term Black Land First. This is their leader. And this is the new set of radicals even after Julius Malema. And he says, we will not stop our efforts until Nkosa Zana Dlamini Zuma is president of South Africa and every white person is dead. He's actually referring to Zuma's former wife. What an idiot. But anyway, it seems she harbors some hatreds for whites. So they want her to be president. And he says, every white person is dead. In your dreams, my friend. In your dreams. You wish that you're going to kill us this easily? I'm still here. The rest of us are here. We're not going to be as easy to kill as you think, you fool. A couple of years ago, maybe about 4, 5, 6 years ago, Julius Malema's EFF unfurled this flag and it said, honeymoon is over for white people in South Africa. And the mass media and everybody ignored this thing. But there you can see there are many photographs of them with this banner, this flag. Economic Freedom Fighters, that's just their stupid name, their stupid tricky name to hide the fact that they are communists. But anyway, they just want to seize everything. However, you'll find that they don't seize anything from the super rich. The people they really want to go after and the people they're threatening are just the common whites who are not the richest people in the country. They, in many cases, are not even as well off as many blacks. But anyhow, EFF, honeymoon is over for white people in South Africa. This same EFF actually takes money from rich white businessmen. I know even businessmen in Italy were giving money to these scumbags. So they get help from overseas, millions and millions of rands. And then this is what happens with it. So you can see non-racially loyal business whites outside the country and Jews giving money to these black communist scum. Here is another one of the banners they unfurled, and this also shows the communism that was driving them. And it says, a revolutionary, this is a communist revolutionary, must become a cold killing machine motivated by pure hate. So there, that's the way they see it. And that is true communism. A revolutionary must become a cold killing machine motivated by pure hate. Don't worry, don't worry. The white guys are the best cold killing machines of the lot. And we can do it very well thought out, very well planned. You wait and see, you fools. So, this photo is a photo. I'm not sure who this particular guy is. I think he might be someone quite famous among the blacks. And he's got a t-shirt there with a photo of President Zuma. And there were blacks who thought that President Zuma could sort out the whites. Anyway, here this guy is writing on a piece of cardboard, kill Boer. So he's smiling away, happy boy, thinking that he can just say kill Boer, and they all think that their numbers are going to be so critically important to them. And we're going to get to this top. Here is something else that somebody put out a few years ago, where they said Afrikaner genocide, 45,000 murdered, 90,000 raped. And I think it was based on an assessment of South African crime statistics. They try to hide what happens to the whites, and these numbers could be close to the truth. I've even seen 68,000, and when you see how they arrive at it, it might be close to the truth. And in all the wars that white South Africans have fought, they've never lost even a fraction of that number. But that's the number of whites who've been killed in peacetime in this country, in so-called peacetime. Huge numbers. More whites have died in peace under blacks than the total number of blacks who were killed apparently due to white violence under apartheid. And that is a whole other topic. In my lecture that I did, The History They Didn't Teach You, 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, I pointed out to people that those numbers, even for the time of apartheid, are not correct. And I show people that the actual number of blacks killed by whites is very small. That in actual fact, most of the people who died under apartheid were probably blacks killed by black communists. But liberals and others don't like to talk about the truth. But anyhow, even against those statistics that the liberals use, like the 21,000 that they say died in 46 years of apartheid, well, as you can see, that's a lot less than maybe the number of whites who've died, but nobody's complaining about that. And the whites are a much smaller part of the population. Another thing from South Africa, due to the farm murders, there was a time when people started putting these crosses on a hill. And they put a cross for every farmer who was killed. You can see the Afrikaans people going and putting up a cross, and I think it might even have a name on it, for every single farmer and member of their families who were killed. And there you can see. Here you can see more of the same. So These are just the farmers, and the farmers are a tiny portion of our population, but the white farmers and their wives and others have been murdered for years and years. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that white people have very real fears. These fears are justified. There are many dead, and the blacks, who outnumber us 11 to 1, we're about 9% of the population. They outnumber us 11 to 1, and they are feeling so confident. They are feeling so confident they can just walk all over us, that the white male has lost all his will to live, and the white male is just gonna bend over, and the white male is just gonna lay down and die. And that is what we must not do. Now, some of you overseas have seen this face around a lot. This is Simon Roche of an organization called the Saidlanders, and he's been running around for a couple of years now overseas and doing his publicity, and he's constantly talking about civil war and race war and how the only people who can save the whites are these Saidlanders. And he's always saying to you, well, everybody's going to die, but just give me some money. And that is for the Saidlanders. And this is Simon Roche. And I don't have a problem with him pointing out that the whites are under threat, etc., etc. But then he launches into this whole business that everybody's going to die. And this also fuels a belief among the whites in South Africa that there is a very real chance that we are going to die, and that huge numbers of us are going to die. Well, this is where I'm going to show you what I've been thinking for many, many years, and why I don't believe that any of this is even close to reality, and why we would be able to defend ourselves. Now, that previous photo was Simon Roche, and the organization was the Saidlanders. And many of these people overseas in America, they think that Simon Roche is a Boer, which he isn't. He isn't a Boer. He's an English-speaking South African. He's not Afrikaans by his birthright, shall we say. And they believe that he also leads the Saidlanders. That's also not true. Here is the real leader of the Saidlanders. His name is Gustav Muller. He's a Christian, and this is the actual guy behind the Saidlanders. And he was busy with this same message back in 2007, and I was already clashing with this guy back in March 2007, when he started his first panic, where he told people that they're about to get killed. So this is the actual leader of the Saidlanders. The reason you don't see much of him overseas is because his English is very bad. So that's why they hire their paid guy, their paid spokesman, Simon Roche, so that he can address the people overseas in English, because this guy's English is so bad. So this is a photo of him several years ago, about 10 years ago. But he's the real leader behind this organization, not Simon Roche. Roche is just a new salesman for them. He's their permanent overseas salesman. And they're also the only group that have got a permanent overseas salesman all the time. And this is among the kinds of propaganda that the Saidlanders put out on their websites. They take stuff like this, and they say that this is what's going to happen in South Africa. So in this case, they look at Yugoslavia, and they say, evacuation is not a choice. Saidlanders aren't choosing to evacuate the cities. In a major conflict, civilian flight is automatic. Saidlanders simply choose to prepare for those people who will be forced to flee. And their big thing is about cities. And we're going to be looking at exactly this thing. And I've been talking about this for years and years. Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's believing me. But I'm going to show you actual film footage. And we're going to sit and we're going to study this. And we're going to see whether what they say and what I say, which is closer to the truth. So this is another example. Simon Roche, genocide in South Africa, race war. Okay. And if you actually go and take the time to go and look at some of his older videos, because he started talking, he started shooting off his mouth overseas, and people started filming him in 2016, you should go back to his old videos. You can find them on the Brian Rue channel. Go back to his old videos. Listen to his predictions. Listen to the date and time and when he made his predictions, and see how accurate was this guy really. And before him, Gustav Muller was saying the same things and worse from 2007 onwards. The main thing that Gustav Muller made a lot of money out of was between 2007 and 2013, Gustav Muller continuously told the whites of South Africa that when Mandela dies, the blacks are going to come and kill everybody. It's based on a quote. There was a black in the government. And even in my book, Government by Deception, I actually used this quote. It is a quote from 1997. There was a black who did say this. He said that when Mandela dies, we will kill you whites like flies. Okay? So another one of these stories of the blacks. Oh, we're going to kill you like flies. We're going to swat you. You're going to be gone. And that's what the blacks say. And make no mistake, they are sincere and they dream of it and they look forward to it. But the truth of the matter is, what happens when the white male decides that he's going to stand up to this? Now, these Zuidlanders, what you got to understand, which complicates these people's message, is, and I heard this in the USA when I went to one of the people who'd hosted Simon Roche and done some fundraising for Simon Roche. I said to the guy who was a Christian, I said to him, by the way, did the Zuidlanders tell you about Van Rensburg, the prophet Van Rensburg? And the Christian guy said, no, they didn't mention anything like that. So I said to him, well, in South Africa, that's the only thing the Zuidlanders talk about. They're constantly talking about this Christian prophet. And what you're looking at is, on the far left is an actual photo of this man. This man is something of a fascinating character. He's a very fascinating character from South Africa's history, from the time of the Anglo-Boer War, the Second Anglo-Boer War of round about 1900. He was an actual character who was there, and the soldiers were quite fascinated by him, and they believed that he was telling them actual prophecies and he was saving their lives. This is the truth. This is what they spoke about. There's quite a bit of record about it, etc. But after the war, this guy also had other visions. He was a kind of a prophet who could see these visions of the future. And these were written down by many people. But the guy who really made a load of money out of it was this guy on the bottom. On the right-hand side, if you look over here, let me just get my pointer. If you look over here, this is the cover of one of the many, many books written by this guy, Adrian Snyman. This guy is actually the father-in-law. This guy is the father-in-law of Gustav Muller. And this guy has written many books, and he's applied his own interpretations to these strange prophecies of this Van Rensburg guy. And the important thing is that Zuidlanders is totally driven by literally this interpretation of Snyman of this guy's so-called prophecies. But others have written about him, including there's even an academic who actually did a proper thesis on von Rendsburg and his prophecies. And that's also been written up. And it's in an Afrikaans book. It's called Die Vier Kleur Wapper Weer. And that means the flag of the former Boer Republic, which is known as the Vier Kleur, four colors, that this flag will fly again. And that was one of his predictions. He said that there would come a time when the whites would rule again. And or that is the way they interpret it. Anyway, be that as it may, this Adrian Snyman is linked to Gustav Müller. And here you can see yet another book cover from Adrian Snyman. But Simon Roche isn't telling you about Adrian Snyman. These people have created lots of videos, lots of books, and it all comes from Adrian Snyman, and it's all this kind of stuff. Messenger of God. So here we have Messenger of God. This was one of the books. I've even got some of these books. I even bought some of these books. These books were written in English and Afrikaans. They were actually written in Afrikaans, then translated into English. I even knew the person who was doing the translations. So these things have been, they've been pumping these things out for many years. The very first von Rendsburg book that I saw from Adrian Snyman was published in the early 1990s. I've got it. It's still sitting here on my shelf. These people have been talking like this for almost 30 years. But they will keep telling you how accurate the prophecies are, even though it's 30 years and they keep on rehashing and reinterpreting what they're saying. And Roche is always out there saying, oh no, the most accurate prophet in the history of the world. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's get some of your old stuff and Gustav Müller's old stuff and let's see who is really accurate. And what exactly did you say in the past? And then you'll see these people are nowhere close to being as accurate as they like to believe. So the bottom line here is that you've got religion, Christianity, with some prophecy thrown into it, very much almost along the lines of the Mormons in America. And you've got these people now taking things that come from so-called prophets. Now, there are also other prophets. There was also a woman. And Seidlanders and the Seidlander strategy for saving people is based on prophecy. It's not based on actual military strategy. It's not based on clear logical thinking. It's not based on military experience. It's based on these books, these prophecies, these particular interpretations of these prophecies. So, we're going to look at some actual history, and I thought I'd throw in a quote from Napoleon, and here is Napoleon saying something which is true, not only for South Africa, but for all of Western history. History is a set of lies agreed upon. Napoleon knew that even then, even 200 years ago. From here onwards and for the rest of the video, we're going to spend most of our time observing violence in its various forms and studying these events very closely. And then you're going to see the points that I'm trying to make. The video that you're about to see is the video that my American friend who'd fought in Vietnam sent me. And in this video, you are going to see a ex-South African in Australia making some comments and showing some video footage. The video footage is actually from Johannesburg. It's from 15 kilometers from where I live, so it's not far away from me, and it's in the central business district. And in this violence, you're going to see the police up against a large number of blacks. And you're going to see a lot of violence. You're going to see the blacks are busy chucking half bricks at the police vehicles. And eventually the police vehicle even retreats and flees. And you'll see footage from inside the vehicle, I think. And you'll see a lot of footage about this event. And we're going to study this event very, very closely. So you'll see here that the guy concludes, the white guy concludes, the police have lost control of Johannesburg. You can't win. It's all over. Look at what the crowd does. Much later, towards the end of this video, I'll explain why the crowd did this and what it was that actually triggered this violence. Because all of these things make for a very interesting study. And you need to understand all these conditions if we are to engage in any kind of defense or self-defense. So watch this video because it's quite freaky. And everybody, you'll see later, even the journalists are commenting, why are the police fleeing? And you will get a feel for why people say that you can't win, you can't win. But we're going to study this closely and I'll show you why we can win.
Good evening, fellow South Africans and citizens of the world. And this is a shout out to several of my subscribers who sent me this video footage. And once again, it's very disturbing what's happening in the cities now. I'm going to show you some video footage which was apparently taken in Johannesburg. But I have conflicting reports that it was actually taken in Pretoria. So I'll give you the both claimed locations. It's definitely happening in Gauteng. You can see the police are on the run. And apparently it's foreign nationals. See, the report that came from David Temba, who is the chief of the JMPD, which I guess is Johannesburg Municipal Police Department, in a tweet said, alert, riots in the Joburg CBD, or Central Business District, foreign nationals attacking police officials. Jeppe Street is closed off at Troy, Delvers and Von Willich. Traffic is congested in the inner city due to vehicles being diverted. And the video footage speaks for itself. The other location that I've been given for the same footage, so this is why I'm in the comments below, perhaps someone can clarify to me exactly where this was taken. And that is the protesters closed off Andries and Struben streets in Pretoria. Now, they might have done that, but I'm pretty sure this video footage below is Johannesburg and not Pretoria. All right, here comes the video footage. As you can see, not looking good for the police, and it's getting more and more out of control in the cities. This is what we've been talking about for months. The police have clearly lost control of the situation, and I don't know what the answer is. And the video footage that follows is apparently from Harrismith, where some blacks are having a bit of a fisticuffs. All right, guys, please remember to subscribe to be kept informed. Ring the bell for updates and have a great
evening.
For what?
Hey, my name's Tom.
Shoot, shoot, shoot! Shoot, man! Shoot! 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 Shoot, yes, shoot! Shoot! Shoot!
An important thing to understand about what you're watching there, that is one of the most important points that I'm trying to make to whites everywhere, is that what you see as failure is stage-managed failure. It is not failure because you can't overcome the problem. It is failure because of other rules that are blocking success. This is a very important point that whites need to understand everywhere in every country. It applies to whites in every single country, especially in South Africa. But it's true in America, it's true everywhere. You are looking at things that are failing, and they're not failing because you can't achieve your task. They are failing because the people managing it have set rules in place that will result in failure. There are other rules in place that you don't know about, and we're going to get to those rules right at the end. But you are watching stage-managed failure. You believe the crowd won and the police were running away from the crowd for fear. You're going to find out what the answers really are. But I'm also going to show you what it is that you need to change in order to achieve success, because it's just a set of tactical and management changes. You will have success, I assure you. Okay, so you saw them fighting the police vehicle, and you saw the police vehicle retreating from the crowd. So you immediately think, oh boy, it's game over. The police are running away. We're going to look very closely at this violence. And did you see that piece of film footage from Harry Smith where a whole bunch of blacks are busy? They're busy and they're angry with somebody. And notice how all the blacks are shouting, shoot, 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 all of them. They're shouting, shoot. And so one guy's got a gun and he shoots the other black. So here they need the white man's technology in order to do it. They are not running around with spears. They're not running around with knives. They need the white man's technology to do their work for them. So be aware of all these things. Lots of tactics that we're going to analyze in these things. So let's take a look at the next video. And the next video, it's a short piece, and it shows us the view from the side of the blacks. And take notice of all the things that are happening. You are seeing tires that are on fire. And the tactics these blacks are using are tactics. These are things that blacks invented when they were fighting apartheid, and the Russians and others helped them to invent these tactics and these methods. This is not just something that just popped out of the sky. This is not something that somebody just, some black guy just thought of quickly. These things were things that they developed over a period of time, and the Russians assisted them with this. And these blacks are using the tactics from that time. And the tactics from that time was designed to stop vehicles. So that is why they also litter things in the road. That's why they set tires on fire. Because vehicles are damaged, even those armored vehicles are damaged when they drive over something and there's a fire underneath the vehicle. The vehicle can get damaged from that. They also use Molotov cocktails. So as we go through this violence, we're going to study this very closely. And then I will show you why I think it's simply a case of tactics. And then we'll be able to defeat these blacks. Even normal white guys will be able to defeat them. Okay, I found this other film footage, which is also part of this footage of these blacks engaging in this violence. And in this film footage, you're going to see something that they don't show you elsewhere. Here you see that there's some kind of political organization going on before the fighting starts. And you will see that there are blacks with red shirts and red and yellow banners. This could either be the South African Communist Party, or it could be Julius Malema's EFF. They are very similar in their style and colors because they are communists. And it's hard to tell which is which from this blurry, distant film footage. But notice these blacks, they are walking between the cars. They've clearly engaged in some kind of roadblock, so the cars are standing still. Listen to the blacks chanting together. They are chanting together because it gives them strength and morale and courage. And the more they chant, the more powerful they feel. And their combined voices give them a psychological strength. These are among the kinds of tactics that these blacks developed over time with the assistance of communists and Jews and other scum. And notice how this is just a rerun of ancient methods, things that whites used to do a long time ago. And these tactics still have value. Also, you'll hear there's a certain sort of a blaring vocal device there. And that is a vuvuzela. It's like an African trumpet. It's a retarded trumpet, okay? A vuvuzela. And so you'll hear this chanting and then the vuvuzela in between. So this is the precursor to the violence. Now we're going to take a good look at something from the police side, and you're going to see a lot of film footage from inside the police vehicle. The vehicle that was under attack is a Nyala. A Nyala was created by the whites at the end of apartheid. It was one of the experimental vehicles that was coming out of all of these fights with the blacks in the townships, etc. And this was one of the vehicles that they designed, and it actually came out towards the end of apartheid. And it's a good vehicle. And this vehicle, you'll see, it's an armored vehicle, and it's got a sort of a steel mesh that covers the windows. And take note, these blacks and whites inside this vehicle, by the way, inside the vehicle you'll hear some people speaking in Afrikaans a bit and a bit of anger and stuff, and you'll see blacks and whites working together. And actually, it's typical blacks and whites, multiracial, working together. It's completely chaotic, and you can hear everybody's talking. Everybody's sitting inside. There's one driver. Everybody's talking, and it's just chaotic. This is multicultural way of doing things. Just totally chaotic. Everybody's sitting. Everybody's helpless. Everybody's talking, and it's all chaotic. However, lucky for the idiots inside, this is the white man's technology. It's a white vehicle. This vehicle is doing its job. The vehicle is being pelted with half bricks. The half bricks are just bouncing harmlessly off this vehicle. You'll hear the bangs. You'll hear the bangs continuously as half bricks are hitting this vehicle. There's not a scratch. There's not a window being broken, no damage at all. This vehicle's taking its beating and it's working absolutely fine. White man's engineering, white man's technology works perfectly. So they're sitting inside this vehicle and they're quite fine. Then at a point you're going to see them outside. You'll see the whole street covered in bricks, and you'll see other vehicles, and you'll see police also hiding in places and shooting from behind doors and so forth. But most of the view is from the Nyala, and notice inside the Nyala everything is fine. Okay, the vehicle, the engineering, everything is perfect. Nobody's bleeding, nobody's dying, the vehicle's not in trouble. Everything is working the way it should.
Check at the back, please.
Now that you've watched that, you would have noticed the driver is a white guy. There were a couple of white guys there. They're looking quite fit. You'll see some of them have got weapons. And the white guys are playing a big role in this event. And they are not in any way threatened at all. In the next piece of film footage, you're going to see the police hiding inside the building. They are inside the building and they're peeking out into the road. And you'll hear them speaking in Afrikaans. And now and then, one of them will go and fire some rubber bullets, or I'm not sure if they're also firing tear gas at the black crowd. And you'll hear them make various remarks in Afrikaans. The one says, pas op, pas op, which means watch out, watch out. The other guy, I think the same guy later, says, hy kan 'n bak steen gooi, which means he can throw a brick, but he says it in a sort of admiring way. He's admiring the skill of this black fool who's busy chucking bricks at them. And you'll also hear them talking about Niva Rhino. They're talking about the new Rhino. I think the Rhino is the vehicle that's got the water cannon. But otherwise, they are ducking in and out. They have to watch out for bricks being thrown at them. But otherwise, they are quite calm and they are handling the situation well. And most of these police are Afrikaans. Many of them are Boers. So they're good at this stuff. They know what they're doing. In this piece of film footage, you're going to see one of the white cops inside the Nyala, and you'll see that he's been injured. He was probably hit on the head by a brick. So you'll see he's quite hurt there, but otherwise he's handling it. And in later film footage, we will look at headgear. These cops here in modern day South Africa are not quite prepared for dealing with things being thrown at them, but we'll get back to missile weapons, things being thrown at you.
Kom alleen, kom alleen onder, boys.
Oké, hier is het onder. Meld het, meld het.